Let's go on. Effects analysis.
So you remember that when we met in October, we put a paper to you on effects analysis, and the feeling in the meeting was that it didn't really reflect what the board currently actually does, and that we could make that much clearer. And also that there weren't enough points in the handbook where the ongoing work on effects analysis was made more explicit and crystallised. The paper that you have in front of you, we discussed the principles in this with the monitoring board deputies when we met with them in December, just to be aware. And really there are two areas where we're making proposals to. The first, which is paragraphs 7 through to 9, is intended to clarify what the board does and the limits of what it does, and really, just as you discussed in October, to be more explicit that the board does have regard to issues like financial stability as appropriate. We propose also to amend the definition of effects analysis in the glossary of terms to make it clear that that is not necessarily the same thing as an impact assessment or cost-benefit analysis or other similar methodologies, but not the one that the board currently uses. The second area where we're making proposals is in paragraphs 10 through to 16. And here we wanted to do exactly as I've said, which is to clarify, first of all, that there's a difference between an effects analysis with a small e and a small a, and the formal effects analysis document that we published with a capital E and A. And also to be clearer that this is an ongoing process through the standard setting. And paragraph 12 sets out the chronology that we think is applied and where the effects analysis would be relevant. So we propose to make changes to make that much clearer in the handbook, and that's one of the areas that Alan was mentioning earlier where reordering will make it easier to follow. And we also make it clear that any effects analysis has to be proportionate, that it needs to be relevant and at the right level for the proposal that's being made. So that's broadly where we are. I've gone through that fairly quickly because I'm conscious of time. At the end, we've asked you whether you agree with the proposed amendments in the handbook in relation to effects analysis.
Just two things. One, I think people are going to get a shot at the actual language in this, and so I think this is a conceptual discussion. The second thing is, I think this notion that effects analysis throughout the standard setting process, starting with the research program, through the various stages, through the completion of the standard setting, and in fact, as part of any post-implementation review, as part of any interpretation, as part of any narrow amendments, as part of, frankly, an agenda decision, effects analysis is, in effect, intrinsic in any step the board or the interpretations committee makes. I think that's a relatively uncontroversial concept. The first set of things Richard talked about, if you go back and look at the effects analysis consultative group description, and it's included in one of the appendices to this memo, there was very much an emphasis on the effects analysis ought to be focused on the impact on general use financial statements and the users of general use financial statements. And I think the proposal, I think properly, if you look at paragraph 7, and especially 7B, I think effects analysis has, and I think it's important to emphasize that it will continue to be an analysis with a somewhat broader lens. In effect, if you look at the very bottom of 7B, effective functioning of the capital markets, efficient capital allocation, global financial stability, sound economic growth, this issue of financial stability and the fact that effects analysis takes into account effect on financial stability is something that is being proposed to make clear is part of effects analysis within the due process handbook. In that sense, we are doing something that goes beyond what the effects analysis consultative group sort of asked us to do. I think it's the right thing to do here, but I want people to know that's what we're up to. The last point, and then, Larry, I'll take your question or comment. I think one of the confusions both out there and certainly in the handbook is there's this ongoing process of effects analysis, and frankly, the focus of it changes as you go through the standard setting process. There's this thing that gets produced at the very end of the standard setting process called an effects analysis, capital E, capital A, which talks about the in effect, the pros and cons, the pluses and minuses, the costs and benefits of the final standard. But that capital E, capital A does not, in fact, reflect the full breadth of the effects analysis that has taken place throughout the standard setting process. And trying to differentiate between those two, between the process and the final product, is, I think, a useful step for the handbook to try to do. It may only be for the aficionados, but I think it's something that is useful anyway. So that, I think, is the thinking behind the amendments. Larry?
So, Alan, I totally agree with what you just articulated, which is why I think the point I want to make is on the next paragraph and the example that is used, which I don't think is appropriate, which is assessing the likely effect of new requirements on the cost of borrowing. I would hope that by having good, transparent financial reporting, we're not concerned about if someone's cost of borrowing is going to go up, but rather, you know, if a financial institution is going to charge more or less because they have better, more transparent financial information that they're assessing, so be it. That's the right answer. So I don't understand. So maybe I'm misreading this here.
I think, FABS just provided in the drafting to provide some context about when it says the board is, you know, will respond to specific concerns that may be raised during the development of the standard by stakeholders. And those concerns could go broader than just the effect on the financial reporting requirements. And it was just used as an illustration of what was meant in the drafting. So we don't need to have that.
I think it's a bad example, Henry, because, you know, it could cause me to have higher interest rates, but if the right answer to the economy is...
And I drew on what I was drawing on there was the example, that's what we did do with IFRS 16 in our effects analysis as one of a number of very specific matters that we responded to in the effects analysis.
So maybe to make it real, just to build on what Henry just said, don't know if it'll make you feel better or worse, but it is a real example. So often when we were talking to people about whether or not they would endorse the standard, including in Europe, one of the questions that came up a lot was, will this be a disaster for people who enter into leases because their cost of borrowing will go up? So we felt we needed to comment on it to show that we'd thought about it. What we did in the effects analysis was noted that it may well be the case that a lessee's cost of borrowing might go up if a lender now understands that actually they've got this other indebtedness that used to be off balance sheet, but the board thinks that's a good thing because it means that lenders, have now got better information for the basis for their decision making. So yes, cost of borrowing goes up, but
yeah,
we think that's good.
So
yeah,
perhaps you could rephrase it as that the cost of borrowing better reflects economic risks, underlying economic risks.
Right. Larry, ironically, I had exactly your question on the prior draft of this, and the reason it's still there is that I was convinced that I think this committee would be concerned if an increase of the cost of borrowing was a dispositive element in its decision, in the board's decision making. But I think there's nothing wrong with the effects analysis, including a consideration of what happens to the cost of borrowing. And indeed, somebody said to me exactly what we were just told, which is the EU expects the board
to think about that and to demonstrate that it's thought about that in making our decision. But it shouldn't. I agree with you. It shouldn't be a feather on the scale of decision making. Is that your?
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, I think the part of the issue here comes from the fact that there is a risk that someone read that and conclude that that was an element in your decision-making process. And I think you have to be very clear that, you know, it's an information you may bring and but not something that you would influence, actually, I guess, the decision.
I take that point. I mean, this is already seen, but yes, to the extent we have to, we will make clear that things like the cost of borrowing don't. The handbook certainly won't mention it at all, but you and Larry are saying the explanatory material shouldn't suggest that it's an element in the decision making.
Right.
Now, I agree with that.
And on the question of financial stability, and I think Erki and others could speak to that much more better than I do, but I was troubled by the way it was introduced here by therefore. You know, I'm still trying, you know, when you say these are the sort of objectives and you identify them, and then you say, therefore, financial stability, I have to take the words here, therefore, the board also consider any likely effect on financial stability. Now, it's a bit of the same question on the cost of borrowing. You could have a very healthy decision from investor perspective and transparency and financial reporting that could eventually be at least in the short term negative in terms of financial stability. When you say that, are you saying again, you know, is it something you will be informing on? Is it something that you'll be taking in as a consideration for your decision? I was a bit troubled by that, actually. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of linked to the first item here.
Well, this is brought in because of my comments the last time. And you know, I've always been convinced good accounting promotes financial stability because it gives better insight in risks. Yes, that's why we have in our mission statement long-term financial stability and not short-term financial stability. So perhaps that word could be used here. I still think 380 is a bit too narrow, Richard. The paragraph 380, which says the board is not required to assess the possible broader economic consequences of financial report, I don't like that very much. What I've always said, you can never measure quantitatively whether a standard will lead to more or less growth. That's completely impossible. But for example, IFRS 9, lots of people are concerned about possible effects on pro-cyclicality, economic pro-cyclicality of IFRS 9. And in effect, the ECB is monitoring that, if that is the case or not. I gave a speech on that issue in December. Could we not talk about that because it's outside our remit? I don't think it's precise enough. I do think that we should address in practice the possible economic effects of a standard. In most cases, that will not be the case. But in big standards like insurance, like IFRS 9, we do address these issues, and we should address these issues. So I still think it's too narrow.
I think that the first sentence is really just saying you don't have to, but you do when it's necessary. But we can get the wording better.
If I read it like that, it's none of our business. But that's what you say. It's beyond. It's objective.
Yeah. This is a piece of the draft which is included in the. In the public papers, I think what I would urge is that, Michelle, if you or anyone else has specific comments on the language, we'll take them later. But I take your point, and I take your point about the last sentence of 79, and I'm not sure it's more than
adding the word long term, but we will consider the point. Ross?
I guess this is a point on language, so I won't make it long. I would say, to answer, follow Hans's suggestion, rather than say systematically we can't consider or won't consider, I think we could probably say we can't anticipate and won't necessarily anticipate, because that's softer, and I think it's also the truth. It avoids hitting people in the face saying we don't care, but it also says that we make our decisions without necessarily anticipating. So it's not my point, Hans, is not particularly this paragraph, although it applies nicely to your example, but I would go through the text, combing it, to try and push it in that direction. So it's a general point on language, Chairman, rather than specific, although I think Hans provided a good instance.
In the interest of time?
Sorry?
I don't think education is a particularly controversial topic. The draft that you see will reflect it, and we'll go from there. Let's open the door. Adjourned.